Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
You're listening to Live from the Path. We're coming to you from the Pathway Studios here in the big old suburb of Johnston proper. It's got a wing ding of a show. Shoot, that's not a. Is that inherently positive to say wing ding?
No. People I don't think
so. That's not right.
I've never heard wing ding in a positive light before.
Okay, that's my bad. I didn't think that through. I just said whatever comes out your bin, it's going to be gold.
Here's the deal is I think that it took a dive after they named that font after it. And everyone would give it a shot for funsies, and they're like, this is useless. Yeah, I have no idea what's being written.
Wingding's worse than that stupid Comic Sans.
I hate it.
Hey, you know what happens to me? Okay, hey, this is really wonky and unnecessary for this program, but I'm going to say it anyway.
There we go.
When I'm at work, I'm typing on the Microsoft Outlook, right? I'm typing up an email, and if I backspace, all my characters turn to Chinese. Does anybody have any solutions to that? Have you fellas run into that stuff?
Huh, no.
Okay, well, anyway, nothing to worry about. Here's what we got going on the show tonight.
You got Outlook issues,
hey,
man.
It's info at lifefromthepath.org. You help a brother out. I struggle with the Chinese on my computer. Yeah. Here's what's going on the show tonight. First of all, I'm really excited to hear about Echo's got himself involved in business. And we've met this man before, right?
Once
he's always involved in some sort of stuff or another. And I feel like it just keeps amping up, this business he gets himself involved in. And so I want to hear about it. And it's some sort of combination of he's released a 5-song EP in combo with a comic book.
Yeah.
Like a comic series.
I was puzzled at first.
And I looked at it and I said, my mind is too far blown to comprehend this combination of stuff. But I started digging into it and I love this. I love this thing. So, but Echo's going to explain it much better than I will. So we're going to hook up with him. Have him kind of tell us how this thing came about, what you guys are after, and what you kind of expect folks to get out of it, and definitely how to interact with it. That's what we're hitting for tonight. Can we cover that?
I think we can do that.
Okay, yeah. I think that can be done. All right. Also, this morning I'm reading in John 11, and I come across two things in John 11 where I said, I have not pondered that before. And so I'm going to share them. They're short and quippy. And then you let me know whether you've considered these things, and then we're going to move on with life. There was also an article going around that had to do with 9 unbiblical statements that Bible-loving Christians believe. And there is a forlorn woman taking notes in a forest at the cover of this thing. And I thought, this screams out. This has to be discussed.
This is me on the interwebs.
It's legit.
How do they know my soul?
Now, you know what? I'm going to take this back. That's not a forlorn woman. That is a dreadlocked man. Herrick, can you see that picture? Is a dreadlocked man or a forlorn woman? What are your thoughts?
A little of both, maybe.
Shoot.
Yeah.
I can't handle this world anymore.
Wow.
I can't even live.
My whole life is the lyrics to Turn the Page, you know? Bob Seger knows what I'm saying. All right. So, anyway, we're going to hit that. We also got advice on Dear Life and the Path. Anybody Pope style this week?
Pope style.
Okay. Booba's got some Pope style. Here's the deal. Big thumbs up to Booba. Booba's, everybody else sitting in the show, sitting around on their tukas. And Booba's out there exercising before the show. I passed him on the way in. He's huffing the streets of Johnston.
Yeah.
Scared the flying heap out of me. I thought it was like you look mammothly tall, especially in the shadows, Booba. I thought
Lurch.
Yeah, Lurch is exactly what it was like. It was like Lurch, and I thought Lurch is out for a stroll in Johnson. I said, you don't see that stuff every day.
I am a walking Pathway Church billboard. Is what I am. I'm walking around
for the better or the worse.
People will see this large gentleman that's trying to get healthy, and then we'll drive 2.5 miles and see another sign and go, association.
Yeah.
I can see that he goes to this church.
You know what, Martha? God really does love everybody.
Actually, you know what it looks like, though, Booba? You were heading out of town. It looks like you were upset. The church has done something wrong and you're out.
But then if you were watching me the whole time, for those people that were playing Eye of the Tiger behind me, when I stopped a Quick Trip, I had a change of thought. And I was just like, you know, I think I'll head back. And then I flipped to Yui and then went right back to the church and here I am.
I think that's fair. Have you guys ever tried to start an exercise program and like done the first one in and thought, I should have died like 2 years ago?
Yeah.
With the state that I am in.
Today?
I rode a bike, Booba. I got on a bicycle today.
Sweet.
What?
There's a guy from the church that was moving out of town, and he says, hey, Foost, I know you're looking for a bike. And I said, yes, this face screams, I need a bicycle. So I picked up this bike, and I rode it. I couldn't have gone 3/4 of a mile. And I was winded as all get out, and my legs weren't working correctly. And I looked at the woman that was inside the Casey's where I'd stopped. And so I forgot. I changed my pants. I changed into shorts, right? So I didn't have a wallet with me. I couldn't buy a water. And so I'm huffing water in my hands, cupping it up like a six-year-old in the bathroom of the Casey's. And like, here, I don't know how familiar you guys are with Casey's. Mike knows what I'm talking about.
I know Casey's.
So there's the high-end, we just made it Casey's. There's the upgraded Casey's where they tacked on a sub shop to it, yep, and built on like an extra 4 feet. And there's the run of the shack Casey's.
The legacy Casey's.
The legacy Casey's where the bathroom is hidden behind the counter.
Yep.
There's a bathroom and it's you have to pass the
smokes. And those are scary. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's where I'm at, in the middle of Bondu at a legacy Casey's, huffing out of the sink, throwing water in my face. And I thought, this is not life abundantly.
This is not what the Lord has promised.
I didn't pray hard enough, or like the Holy Spirit is playing a joke on me, because this is not how it's supposed to be, this stuff, what I'm doing here.
That's what Jesus says. I didn't say nothing about no bike.
So here's the only thing I'm thinking. The only thing I can keep from ever doing that again is I actually have to keep biking. Yeah, because yep, I don't like that feeling. Like, that feeling is awful. And so either I have to give up biking altogether and just watch the inches pile on, or I have to keep biking so I don't end up in this position again.
That's a tough call.
That's the kind of situation that I'm in for the first half mile of my walk. Because half mile into my walks, and I've been trying to exercise a little bit, and hopefully people that watch the show and avid listeners can see that I'm losing a little bit of weight, because I'm proud of myself. But if I get a half a mile in, I have this weird fat guy decision point, okay? And I have to make this choice to, all right, I'm already over 400 pounds. I can just give up now, never walk again, and then just end it at like 850.
Right.
Or I keep pushing a couple more miles and then scare the crap out of everybody and lurch in the darkness. And then everyone's like, hey, who's that Loch Ness guy walking around? I'm pretty sure he's walking his way to the Quick Trip. He's going to go get food. Nope, he's not. And then you turn back around. That's the scary situation I find myself in. And I find myself in it every single night, where I'm just like, you know, half a mile's enough, Troy. You could kind of give it up after this. And I'm like, wait a minute, that's 600 pounds. Shut up and keep walking, Troy.
I think that sounds right.
Boova, you pansy, keep moving.
So here's the lesson from tonight, then, is if you failed in a particular area of your life, you're gonna get on it and try to rectify it, and you can't use your first or second experience in trying to handle things the right way as the right bellwether as to you're gonna keep it going.
That's fair.
Like, generally the consequence of doing the right thing after doing the wrong thing for a long time is that the right thing isn't as easy as it should be. And so you're just gonna have to stick with that beast and get on, ride the bicycle.
I like it.
Ride that bicycle.
And don't blame the Holy Spirit if he's not in it. That's the wrong
I don't
wrong
feel
direction.
Like God is blessing me in this situation.
Jesus, take the wheel.
Jesus.
I didn't say nothing about no bike.
This is Jesus, take the pedals, okay?
Get off that bike, Tyrone.
God don't bless no mess. All right, Echo. So tell me, you can explain this better than I can. What have you got yourself involved in? Hit me with it.
Oh, too many things. the Dream Stay experience that just came out this past weekend is something that's been heavily involved in my life right now and a lot of my time. And what that is it's a comic book series started by Lunar 11 Studios. They're a group out of Florida. I have a buddy named Tim Denner who connected me with a guy in Florida. And I know Tim Denner. Tim Denner is fantastic.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you?
That's a man.
Everyone loves Tim Denner. Moving on.
Yeah, I'm going to name drop Tim Denner later, just so I can say I know.
I was talking to him on Facebook just yesterday.
Oh, wait, were you really?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Wow. Okay.
Why does no one believe Dan?
Wait, really? I don't know. That's a good point. Something about that's untrustworthy, Dan. Actually, crap, so now you got me off on a tangent. Random Tim Denner story. I was at the Need to Breathe concert.
I
was sitting on the bridge soaking up the free vibes, and I could see Tim Denner walking the grounds, and I thought, I found a way to flag him down, and we came up and we chatted shop for a while. And then he offered me some lip balm, and things got awkward, and we broke ties.
You know what stinks is my eyes were like, my eyebrows were up, and I was half smiling, looking for a great story. And then it didn't happen, and then I was trying to decide how to change my facial expression without making your story look terrible.
Dude, Echo's cool, and he's got a Tim Denner story, and I wanted to tell one. That's all I had. All right, continue.
Okay. Lunar Studios, that's where we were at.
Yeah, because I was looking for somebody to do this kind of comic book idea, because it's something that really hasn't happened in music before. where a musician has collaborated with a comic book, kind of like a concept album. The only people I can really think of is Coheed and Cambria.
Yeah.
They're the kind of the other ones I can think of. But we were just like, we want to make a unique experience. I think the music alone is awesome, but if you had a chance to check out the comic, they killed it. It's amazing.
Yeah, so I checked this out just out of sheer curiosity, right? Like, I'm like, album? I'm like, great. Because usually when he puts something out, I'll check it out and have a listen to it. And it's enough to get on my iPod. It's pretty solid, you know? And so, and then it says, well, it's part of an experience. I'm like, I want to be part of an experience. Yeah. The Dream State experience. Absolutely. What's this about? So then I download this comic book that comes with it. I'm like, okay, this is great. And I read through it. And like the first couple pages in, I'm like, I'm not really sure what's going on here. Like, so I listened to a tune, like I was trying to soundtrack with it, and I thought maybe you got to like Pink Floyd this thing, you know? Maybe you're supposed to be reading and listening at the same time.
Throw in the Wizard of Oz real quick.
It turns out it doesn't matter. Like, I think it's both of them stand on their own, but they both actually fit together well too. So it really is an experience just as it's been dubbed. And frankly, the website. What was the website where you can get this thing?
Yeah, dreamstateexp.com.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you go to this thing, like, they still don't give you any more information. They're just like, hey, download it. Because I thought maybe there'll be a teaser, and I'll be like, no, I don't want to have this. Or, yeah, that sounds great. And I get there, and it's like, download now. I'm like, you've got me pigeonholed. All right. My curiosity's way too peaked now. I got to take this. So anyway, I read through it last night. I listened to the album, and both are definitely worth checking out. When I was listening to the album, though, I saw that you have quite a few collaborators on the tunes. Who were some of them fellas?
Yeah, so the first track is actually Matthew Lanebecker, who just absolutely destroys that hook, and he's from Hope. So I kind of been knowing him for a while, and he's one of them. And then, let's see here, track two is John Cheatham. I don't know if any of you know him, but he is a phenomenal singer who actually used to live here in Iowa. But decided to kind of take his career in a different path in Atlanta.
Sure.
So now he's rocking it in Atlanta, Georgia. And then the third track has my twin on it, Becca. She's singing the chorus. And got a couple guys, a guy named Epic, and then Loso, who's out on the West Coast. A couple rappers that I respect. And then next one.
So how do you do that? Do you, like, do the track and then send it to them, and they kind of throw down on it and then send it back, or? Or do you got to fly him in? How does that work?
So it kind of depends. So far, I haven't had the experience to fly somebody in, really, except my producer.
Absolutely.
Aaron Hoglund. He was the one who made all of that just sound phenomenal. But most of the people, I've recorded the track. Then I'm like, hey, I could really use a verse on this. Or let me know what you think about this song. Can you add something to it? So sometimes it depends on the artist. Like John Gibbs on the fourth song. He's under a record label, so I kind of had to go through them and be like, hey, I would love to talk with John and get this started. What does that look like? Obviously, there were a couple dollar bills that they wanted. So,
absolutely.
Yep. Yeah. So we figured that out, and that's kind of how it goes.
That's way cool. Do you kind of pick and choose who you're going to collaborate with, or is like whoever's available, or you're just like, hey, I got this thing, and I just feel like your part would fit perfectly with whatever you come up with. It's your vibe that I'm looking for.
It's huge, like determining who you want to collaborate on a song. Especially for me, I take it very, very seriously. Like, I think about a vibe, I think about the song, I think about the message, and then I think about people who's passionate about that. And so every single one of those songs, yes, some of them are more well-known artists, and that was a blessing.
Yeah.
But for the most part, it was like, I really know that you would fit this song perfectly. And honestly, there were artists that I hit up that was like, you would fit this vibe so well, would love to discuss connecting. A couple of them slipped off, a couple didn't ever really respond.
Sure. We've had that problem with Phil Collins. We ask him in here all the time.
Multiple times.
Oh, yeah. Phil He's Collins. Like, no.
Well, Echo, you lost me at you're really serious about making sure you choose who you're going to be having on your tracks, because I was wondering, what exactly vibe do you have to get to feature Live from the Path on the background of one of your tracks? And then you kind of lost us that you're very serious about the selection.
It's, not, it's a family program, Booba. It's not fair to put him in that position, what you've just asked there.
Well,
we're still all waiting for an answer.
We are indeed waiting for this track that will be featuring Live from the Path.
So let me ask you this: How did you pick Lunar 11? Like, have you been associated with them before? Had you seen some of their work, or is it just like, how did you get hooked up with those guys?
Oh my goodness, that is the part of the story that is just ridiculous. I went off of Tim Denner's word. Like, he's like, David's a solid dude, and I was like, okay, I'm kind of desperate. I really need to find somebody to figure this out.
I'd take even a half-solid dude at this point, sure.
Yeah. Like, and I messaged him, and literally my message to him was, I can't really explain to you what this is going to look like, but what I'm looking for is for you to capture the essence and the theme of this EP, and I want you to make a comic book out of it. And however that looks for you, I would love to talk about it. And so he kind of at first hits me back. He's like, well, okay. I mean, I'm kind of working on my stuff. And yeah. I don't really know if I'm ready for this yet. But then he's just like, you know what? Let's go for it. And oh, my goodness. I'm so grateful for him because I didn't know him at all. I still haven't met him personally.
Right.
I've only seen him over like FaceTime and Google Hangouts. But he is an awesome dude. David. He's the one who kind of put it all together.
Is he does he have a team of guys, or is he the artist and the and all that stuff for the comic book? Or
he was the creative mind behind it. He brought all those the plot and all the story together, and then he had a team of people who kind of brought like tangibility to those characters and
yeah.
who they looked like, what it was going to be, and so yeah, he's hired different people.
I gotcha.
To do different parts of it, but yeah, he's kind of the main head guy of it.
So is there, I mean, is there, there's more to the experience than the beginning, right? So there's more of this coming.
Are you sure you didn't see anything on the site? Because you seem to really know what's going on here.
Here's the deal. I listened to the tunes, and I wrote, here's the deal. I read the comic book, and I'm like, well, what else happens? now I'm kind of angry. I live in a Netflix kind of world. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you got to have
Netflix.
It all.
With the rest of the comic book. You know?
First season I can't two. Read this to completion
and
right now.
And then I went back and Pink Floyd did the tunes again. I'm like, someone tell me what's going to happen. That's actually the reason I invited you in. I'm upset.
I'm demanding the comic book now.
But yeah, I'm excited for the next part. You know, like I want to know what's awesome. Going to happen. I think I kind of get the vibe and the gist, and so I want to see how it's going to kind of all roll out. So there's more to come.
Yes, and honestly, the way I like to put it is the comic book and the music is an appetizer. It's just kind of like, you know, it kind of settles, and it's kind of something that you enjoy, but then you're like, okay, let's get into the meal. And so I'm really excited for that. The reason why we did an appetizer first is just kind of to get it out there. We made it free for a reason.
Yeah.
Because we just wanted to get everybody ready for the experience. And then now moving forward, Lunar 11's planning on doing a full graphic novel of it and even expounding further. Like, it's huge for them. I'm really excited for them. I'm planning on doing a full album with
are you,
it.
I was going to say, yeah. Are you going to do an EP every time a comic book comes out?
No.
You're going to be busy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, actually, I mean, it's yes. kind of in the works to have a couple songs and a comic book coming out
excellent.
In another couple months. So
that's way cool. Like, yeah. like just the concept is, you're right, it's not something you see every day. And just the premise alone piqued me to want to know exactly what's going on. And
that's awesome.
And lucky enough, like I shouldn't say lucky, but like I mean, you guys pumped out a product that was solid, right? Like it wasn't
that's
all
good.
Hype. It wasn't all hey, you know, a big intense build up, and then you know, it wasn't that at all. It was really really good.
Actually, that's a good point because like in our day and age, especially with the tools people have at the resources, and actually our show is a good example of this. It's pretty easy to publish stuff,
yeah.
Right? It's
yeah.
pretty easy to show up to market true. And say, hey, I know the technology, or like. I found the ways of which I can get something print to paper, or I can get it so you can download something, or I bought a microphone and can, you know, lay down some tracks. Like, you're getting a much broader, you have more access to people who are producing art, and it becomes actually a little more interesting in trying to refine art and bring quality stuff to market that actually has something to say.
Mm.
And I think that's something that is in a rush to produce, we don't always consider what we're actually producing. And so that means the things that actually – you know, carry with it some of that weight, some of that thought, do start to stick out. And you can see time. Like, it's weird to say that, but you can see time. You can see thing when time, things have been matured a little bit, have
yeah.
had time to age and sit and tell an actual a story, a narrative, and fit together rather than something where you're just kind of cranking stuff out and dumping it out for the world to take a glimpse of. We were talking just before the show started. I was intending to broadcast on Periscope tonight. And Twitter basically bought an app, Periscope, of which you can do like live streaming.
Yeah.
And so like I thought, well, maybe we'll just set up an iPad in the corner and you can also kind of catch like an alternate view. Like anybody cares, right? But like I thought, you know, whatever. If there's a guy eating a salad and there's six guys watching that, you know, some way look at the back of my head while I talk to Echo. but like, again, that's kind of the other side of that culture, which says like anybody can kind of turn something on and say, check out what I'm producing. And we're just voyeuristically interested as opposed to seeing a crafted art form. Mm-hmm. And it's not that those two things can't mingle. I think there's some circumstances in which it can. But, like, there is something about actually still having a craft and putting art together. And from what I've seen of this project, like, it's got it. It feels like something. And it's like as it can go together. And it just shows some of that maturity that you don't always find. So, I mean, congratulations on that. Like, it's got that vibe to it.
And that's huge to me to hear that. And I thank you. And honestly, I have to give props to not only, I mean, obviously God for continuing to grow me myself. Like, I've had plenty of people hit me up and be like, man, you've matured since the last one.
Yep.
There's a lot that's changed. And I'm like, thank you. I got to also give it up to my buddy Ryan Buck. He's just poured into me, challenged me. You know, like, music is literally wearing your arm on your arm on your sleeve. Yeah.
wearing your arm on your sleeve. I did this.
Exactly.
I wear both arms on both sleeves.
Do I have my arm in my sleeve? It's wearing your heart on your sleeve and letting everybody else assess it. And so it's really good for me to have those people who challenge me, who are like, you know, that's not your best. You can do better.
Hey, man, RP Buck is fierce.
Yeah, and he's awesome about it, and he's a visionary, and he's creative, and I've really got to give it up to him and everybody else who helped with this project, because it's not just me. I definitely did not do this alone. But I actually really appreciate you bringing up that topic of art. Just with the kind of media and society we have now, like, you think of, I mean, and this is no diss to it, but like things like Spotify, you know,
yeah,
like it's a great tool, but it's also devaluing art. People don't buy records anymore. You know, you don't put down 10 to 15 bucks. I mean, people don't have money for that. That's real. That's how it is.
Yep.
But we also don't value art as much anymore. And so people don't put as much time in the art because they're trying to continually put out more and more and more. So that will kind of just help fund what they're trying to do. And
it is kind of a circle, though, right? Like, I can name probably two artists that I keep track of who put out solid albums. I mean, the whole album. I can listen to the thing, song number one to song 10. They're all good. I think I got two guys in my playlist that I can trust to do that. But, like, most people, it's 99 cents. It's one time. You know, I kind of dug that one tune you put out. But other than that, you know, like, I checked out the rest of your album. I feel like you just kind of phoned it in, you know? And so, like, that is, I mean, it's, but, I mean, is that in response to the way that I buy things, or do I buy things in response to that?
Yeah, you know? Your question is it, are we acting that way in reflection of the art that's being produced, or are we simply consuming it differently that causes the art to have to change?
Exactly.
That's dope.
Exactly.
That's a good question. That is a good question. And I don't know, here's a relevant example. I was listening through, and I picked up the old, you remember the old the first Collective Soul album, Mike?
Yeah.
It had Shine on it.
Yeah. All right,
so, like, there's, like, three or four decent tunes on there, and those guys they put out, like, one or two good songs per album for the next five.
Yep.
But, like, there wasn't anything coherent about the album itself. And I appreciate high art, but I'm nowhere snooty about it. I'm like,
you're certainly not cultured.
No, that's pushing it too far, right? But, like, having listened to that, I thought, you know, but like, I just recently started, like, listening more into to Muse, and like, they got full albums worth of stuff.
Yeah.
And those guys are putting out not just like the stuff that you hear on the radio, right? But like, give those full albums a spin, and there's some stuff going on in there that can draw you in and kind of connect you with some things. And so, like, and there's places for both, right? I still if I'm gonna ride my bike, I ride my bike to, like, the radio pop tune. It makes me feel like I'm getting some business done.
That's so true.
But like, and I might consume that on a 99-cent level, right? But like, if you're going to introduce, it's just maybe there's just not as many people playing in that field, and it really is a good question as to which is tail is wagging the dog.
And I think honestly, it depends on what lane you're in as an artist. Like, for some artists, that's their lane, is that they want to make that pop music. That's trending. And I mean, a lot of it also has to do with the label. The label wants them to make that kind of music. But I mean, we're all in a different lane. And sometimes music sounds like pop hits, but sometimes it's just artistic. So
right, and it's not really a fair label, though, is it? Right, like to call something pop one way or the other, you're really just defining whether other people dig on it. And it's too bad that's gotten such a stigma to it.
Mm-hmm.
Where, like, it's okay for me to listen to an orchestral rendering of Katy Perry's Firework.
Right.
Right. Right. And there's like, oh, hey, that's epic. Right. But like,
that's music.
But if I listen to it straight on the radio and I dig on it and I throw my arms out and all this business, then, like, that's lowbrow. And, like, make your own choice as to what's lowbrow and what's not. But, like, the fact that other people dig on it can't really be a good barometer as to whether it's art or otherwise. Like, it's just a weird – it's a weird tangent, and the problem is we are in such a microculture where not only is everything brought up to the forefront very quickly, but everyone's opinion on it seems to have equal weight and also comes out very quickly. And so, like, we're not so much digesting art as we are, like, demolishing it and gnashing it up and then pooping it out.
You know what? That's actually the truth of it, though. Like, and this ties in a bit what Dan's been talking about here recently about posturing. You know, when Jesus talks a lot about that, he talks a lot about posturing, not only when it comes to your relationship with him, but your relationship with others, right? Mm. And, like, if I had to nail down the culture from what it is, mostly most of it is posturing. You know, most of Facebook is posturing. Most of Twitter is posturing. Like, I can say, hey, I just listened to the new Echo album and blah, 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 like 5 minutes after I listened to it, and then you can think better of me because I dig on new music. Like, Mike's a plugged into the music scene, right?
Yeah, right.
That's why I pumped it out 5 minutes after I read. You know, I didn't do that. But, like, I mean, as soon as I hear something, I'm like, look how cool and with the times I am. Wham, I just did this, you know? Like, that was more of a posture. If I dug it, which I did, I invite the man on the show, and then, like, we'll talk about it later, you know?
Yeah.
And so, like, it really is a culture of mostly posturing to take, you know, the scene that you're involved in or the music that you dig on and let other people know how it defines you as your postured internet self. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Dude, that is a great point. It's like a lot of even how we're interacting with art is more to try to get people to understand more about us than it is to try to actually take in a concept that is beyond us.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, yeah. I want to see what does this say about me? What do these paintings from the 16th century say about me?
Yes.
Like, not what. How does this inform a culture? How do we understand the mind of a man that got there? How do we understand an environment or a people group that sees these things and these are either inspired or dejected by them? But instead, we say, "Hey, I saw this. What do you think of me?" Because that's Lamesville.
Tell me that's not the truth, though, right? The last guy that said, "Hey, I just picked up, you know, the original Apocalyptica album." You know, that makes you want to think a certain way about him. People that talk about, I listen to I got this guy on my Facebook. Like every 3 days, he's pumping out like a new reggae album. He's like, "This is the best reggae album ever," and like I'm sure it is. But like, what are you trying to get me to think about you that you continue to pump out? Like, do you understand that I love reggae? I love reggae. You got that? You got it. You listened to me about reggae. Hear me, you know. And like, I get it. But like, I feel like you're more trying to get me to understand you in a certain way, which is not necessarily bad. But like, it is a bit of posturing, right? If I knew you personally, I'd know you like reggae.
You know what's interesting is that like, I think we see that in how people digest scripture. It's the same deal. And that's how we got into the culture where we are, you know, we just pull stuff out. Like, we yank it from where it sits in a story, and we own them. And we want to say, this verse belongs to me. I'm like, well, actually, he was talking to Paul, who was very poor at the time. Has very little to do wearing, like, a gold hat. So, like, and I think that's where we've got kind of this piecemeal understanding of God's grand story. Because we pull it out and say, this is what's going on in my life. This reflects it. And, like, it's not that Scripture can't do that. But I think if that is the only way in which we interact with it, we get a very skewed understanding of who God is, how we exist within his kingdom, and then we're just kind of pushing each other around with bits of verses and saying, know this, know this, know this. And this is who I am because this is what I'm sad today. This, and I want you to know that because I gave this particular thing from Psalms. And so like, there's even this aspect of how we interact with God and with Scripture that reflects some of that I think is ultimately unhealthy because it pulls our eyes from again understanding some of those broad narratives, which puts our lives in the right in life kind of context, which does bring with it hope. But sometimes we're dwelling so much on what Scripture says about me or how I want people to think it says about me that we just again we're kind of chewing it up and pooping it out. Like we're still not digesting it and having it become part of us.
I think going along with that, we tackled a concept maybe a year or two ago here on the show that was the Bible is not God's personal love letter to you. It is a book that's meant for everyone to get wisdom from and to get guidance from and to be able to jump into and understand that that's his living word. It's not the book to Ben. You know, it's not the book to Troy, yet we piece through it like, oh, God was obviously speaking to me directly on this piece, and therefore I can use it as ammo for myself rather than using it to glorify God and show more about his character. I'm going to show more about my character. And you can't devalue the word more than that by telling everyone out there that, hey, I'm going to share this verse from Psalms or I'm going to share this verse from Matthew that has to do with my life, and this is how I take it, and therefore you should take it this way or understand more about me because of it. And it's just like, no, you're not understanding that the Scripture is meant to show who God is, not who you are.
So there's elements of that. Like, I get where that comes from, right? And if I remember what we were talking about, so like, there's elements of, I know how people get there. It's just short sighted, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
There's I can understand who I am through Scripture,
absolutely,
because I understand who God is, and through that process, it does help inform me, help me to understand myself better, right? So we agree on that.
Yes.
It's when that gets skewed, and we say the sole focus of Scripture is a dear Ben,
right?
I love you, and that's it.
Exactly. The word is for every single person. No one can say that it's not for them, but it's not specifically to them, for them alone. Right. It's for everyone to take pieces of.
Because
we
find it acceptable when people take Jeremiah and say, you know,
he needed me to
get in my womb, right?
Yeah.
They're like, yeah, that's me, right?
That's me specifically.
But then they don't read Zacchaeus and go, I should get down from every tree I've ever been in. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I'm
not saying that. Like, I agree with you. Like, there are parts of, like, your value can certainly be derived from the Bible. Your value in why Jesus came and the kingdom of God can certainly be taken away from Scripture.
Right,
but it is odd in where some, you know, people choose to insert themselves into the Bible and what places they don't, right? Like, I'm definitely Jeremiah, where God knit me in the womb and has great plans for me. But Zacchaeus, I'm definitely not that guy, right? Definitely not, you know? And so it does seem, sometimes hard. You know, and where people choose to insert themselves in what's for them and what's not.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, so Echo, here's the deal. The chat is wondering if you would be willing to, as I quote it, spit a verse.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Yeah, I think we could probably do that.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we didn't prepare a track or anything, so it's just going to have
That's
to go
okay.
freestyle.
Yeah, we're going
to. Do you want me to hit you with a tuning note? I feel like you did it without me, so fine.
You hit me with the.
I was gonna say, I think we've tried this before, where I tried to beatbox. I'm not gonna do that this time. I screwed it up last time.
I think that's fair.
I feel like I didn't make any mention of you doing anything. So far, it was just me and Echo. So far,
I was saying I've done that last time. Man,
there's your answer to the lack of collaboration on the album, Booba.
Yeah,
boom.
Well, hey, fine.
Welcome to the party, Zacchaeus.
Hey, man, I'm trying to draw my identity from being right next to Echo. I'm trying to be cool by being next to this guy. I'm in proximity to someone cool. I'm trying.
Hey,
I tried that with the Tim Denner story. It went very poorly.
It went awful. I thought I might be able to top it. It did not work.
Oh man.
All right. What is this? Is this going to happen right now? What do you got? Need some time?
Let's do it.
Okay, let's make it happen.
Yeah, so I'm going to give a little bit of context. This is the second song on the album, just because I also have my notes right here, just in case I go off. this one's called Blink. It was a really personal story for me. It was something I struggled through last year. Just letting go of a situation, letting go of a relationship from the past.
Yep.
That I hadn't fully let go. It was like, oh, yeah, I've totally gotten over that. But I was living in this secret shame of actually still having those memories and that regret of leaving it and letting things go.
Yeah.
And so it was just like, it was painful, but I needed to do it. And so this is the second verse from it.
Okay.
And here we go. Wish I could rewind to years ago. Wish I never left you all alone. But I put a burden on your loan. A debt of a broken, lonely soul. And I thought that's all we wrote. But I should have known that you can't let your heart go without losing some of your soul. And you can't leave the globe without you missing home. You're what I wanted all along. Too late for us to change our song. And I just want to scream, come back home. This is where you truly belong. But it's time for me to let you go. It's time for me to stand and be strong. It's time for my love to find freedom. Cause God had a reason for this all along. I won't forget about you, but I can't hold on. Gotta find my heart again and move on. Maybe I can find my own song and live life before my time is gone. I'm gone. So, yeah.
Yeah. Hey, man, I remember that one. I dug on that last night. Of course, I had a bunch of other stuff going on, but I heard it. It was good.
What do you mean you had a bunch of other stuff? What, are you eating toast? He's...
No.
I think he was saying there was instrumental to
the
music.
The man has put together an experience, an epic collaboration, and you're eating toast.
Hey, maybe the toast is a part of the experience.
I didn't say any of that. I said there was other stuff going on, which means there was background music and beats. I was referring to the project the man put together.
He's far more
the meanderings of myself.
He's far more gracious than I think he has to be. I'm going to call R.P. Buck to get her and set you straight and make you... ramp your life up a level. That's the deal.
Hey, Ryan, I've been doing dad stuff. Can you yell at me for a bit? Yeah, I got some free time. Wouldn't you available Thursdays?
I mean, I didn't see him exhibiting any of that behavior, but, you know, something to consider.
Oh, man.
Okay. Well, Echo's going to be in the studio. Hey, if you have any questions for him, the chat is live. Also, if you want to shoot us an email, you can do info@livefromthepath.org. Hit him with the websites and stuff so they know where to go to pick up some of this action.
Absolutely. You can go to www.dreamstateexp.com. That's going to give you some preview into the album. That's going to give you some preview into the comic book. And you can also download it. Don't feel pigeonholed, but you should download it.
No, you probably should download it. Yeah. What?
No. I'm agreeing with that. I think that's fine.
You can also find me at MikeSpitsRhymes.com.
Yes.
Where I also drop the beat.
Are we going to have like a spit-off?
Yeah, absolutely. Tell me when this is going to happen.
Oh, man.
Is this going to happen?
11/16. That's when it's going down.
11/16, okay.
I sure hope not.
I'm gonna get my inspiration together. And I'm going to turn my hat slightly.
Oh.
Over the top style.
Ooh.
Yep, this is all a good idea.
It's going to go horribly.
All right, so here we go. Here's the deal. I woke up this morning, and I'm still on. We talked about this a few months ago on the show, but I'm on a Bible before breakfast. just helps me digest what I think I should be before I eat. Helps keep me in line. I need things like that. Mm. And so I was reading John 11, and two statements that stuck out with me. I just thought I'd run these by you fellows and see if you noticed these before. John 11 is the death of Lazarus, and there's a part where they're talking to Jesus and said, and Jesus intentionally doesn't go to see Lazarus, and it says, the disciples said to him, Lord, if he has fallen asleep, he will recover. Now, Jesus had spoken of his death, but they thought he meant taking rest and sleep. Then Jesus told them plainly, Lazarus has died. And for your sake, I am glad that I was not there, so that you may believe. But let us go to him. And here's the verse. So Thomas, called the twin, said to his fellow disciples, let us also go, that we may die with him. And I thought, now here's the deal. Thomas has been very narrowly put in as the doubter.
Yeah.
As the doubter. And but this is the same Thomas that says, let us also go, that we may die with him. Thomas has been unfairly pigeonholed.
No, I agree.
I mean, generally, even on the doubting part, like, there's part of me that's like, yeah, I feel like I'd say, hey, you got to show me something. This seems outrageous, right? I get that part. But, like, this is the same guy, and he says, let us also go, that we may die with him, that we may die also as Lazarus has died.
Yeah.
And I thought, that's straight up strong. And I had never, whatever, I've gone by that verse, I guess, before, and it just had not registered with me to give A, Thomas some credit, and B, that's a freaking heck of a statement.
Yeah,
it is.
We're heading out? Good, let's die with him.
I feel like we're pretty quick to forgive Peter and Paul, and then Thomas makes one small request, and like, hey, I'm having a hard time, like, fully buying into this thing, and then, like, he's done for thousands of years. No one wants to redeem Thomas, you know?
Yeah, I saw your body mutilated. Excuse me if I'm not really sure this is the right...
Paul shows up, he's like, I used to kill people just like you, or have them killed. We love Paul! You know? Thomas is like, listen, this extra spiritual stuff and the people coming from the dead, I'm just having a hard time processing it all. Can I get some help? And then everyone hates Thomas. That seems really unfair.
Yeah. So anyway, item one that stuck out with me. I'm not sure it's a conversation starter. Just set my notice.
Yeah, we gave it a shot.
Okay, no. Here we go. Number two. So there's a plot. The Jews are now plotting to kill Jesus. It says John 11:45. It says, many of the Jews, therefore, who had come with Mary and had seen what he did, believed in him. But some of them went to the Pharisees and told them what Jesus had done. So the chief priests and the Pharisees gathered the council and said, what are we to do? For this man performs many signs. If we let him go on like this, everyone will believe in him, and the Romans will come and take away both our place and our nation. And now listen to this statement from Caiaphas. But one of them, Caiaphas, who was high priest this year, said to them, you know nothing at all, nor do you understand that it is better for you that one man should die for the people, not the whole nation should perish. All right, here's the explanation I don't remember. He did not say this of his own accord, but being high priest that year, he prophesied that Jesus would die for the nation, and not for the nation only, but also to gather into one the children of God who are scattered abroad. So do you guys recall that Caiaphas was behind the prophecy that said Jesus was going to die for the nation?
I don't remember that, honestly.
No, I do not remember that at all.
I mean,
high priest that ended up like,
and it's like
charging Jesus
him.
With
yeah,
the
yeah,
whole,
whatever.
Hey, we're gonna kill you, kind of deal.
I mean, so here's what I'm thinking. What I'm thinking about that though is like, if you're the high priest and you go around prophesying stuff, I mean that stuff better happen, right? Otherwise, what's your Leviticus, whatever, where they you don't trust the guy whose prophecies don't come true.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know. It seems like he might have had a stronger motivation to kill Jesus beyond someone who said, like, oh, he's afraid of losing their kingdom, or we're concerned that the Roman Empire is going to blah, blah, blah. But, like, the guy said it was going to happen. If it didn't happen, he looks like a fool. What are your thoughts, Eric?
So,
I'm looking at this, and I'm almost thinking that John has the advantage of hindsight on this one. Just he's able to look back and after seeing it all play out, say, oh, yeah, well, I guess he forecalled it without having known that it was going to happen. But it also makes me ask the question about how did John know this? I mean, this would be like a closed door session of the religious leadership. I mean, this would be like the Supreme Court going into their own room and just saying, hey, let's talk about this ourselves and hash some of this all out. And so somehow John's privy to this information. But then, you know, I guess after looking at it and seeing and realizing what had happened, what the guy had said, and seeing, hey, what do you know? This guy called it. Well, give credit where credit's due. The guy called it. But he didn't want to just say, hey, this was Caiaphas speaking. I mean, let's give some credit to where it came from.
Huh. So.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, some of these guys became believers later, so no doubt someone in that room probably did hear it firsthand that he talked mm-hmm. to.
Oh, yeah.
That he got the report from. Oh, yeah. And Caiaphas, he called it. I mean, yeah, you're right.
It was interesting the way the Bible proposed it, too, because it says, after he says, it's better for you, though, he did not say this of his own accord, but being high priest that year, he prophesied that Jesus would die for the nation. Like, it is a, this is the truth. But it wasn't coming from it. But it's like a but. It's like this has contributed to that. I just thought it was interesting that, like, I mean, I've read that. I've been reading through John many times and can't say either of those two things stuck out at me. And it was just interesting that the two of those, as I was going through John 11, jumped out.
It's not that he even comprehended why Jesus was dying, the purpose behind it, or how he was saving the nation, other than maybe, well, you know, we're going to have riots, everybody's upset. You know, he might have just been thinking that way. We need to get rid of him because he's causing problems.
But so he's saving them from the trouble he caused?
No. So listen to what it's saying. Not for the nation only, but also to gather into one the children of God who are scattered abroad. So from that day, they made plans to put him to death. So the justification is that, like, this is not the Messiah, but it is through his death that these things will then occur. And so we are actually doing the work of the kingdom for him to die.
You know, that actually makes sense because in John 6, I think, Jesus says that, like, you will seek me and you won't find me. And the Jews were talking amongst themselves, like, what does that mean? Is he going to head out outside of Palestine and start talking to people outside of this area? And is that what he means by we won't find him? And so, like, that kind of actually ties that together a little bit, you know, where he's talking about all the folks coming, you know, all the abroad folks. That kind of brings in their way of thinking a little bit clearer.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, that's it. That's it. Just a couple things I saw in John 11, I thought. Throw them out, you fellas. See if you recognize them. That's it.
I mean, we didn't reinvent the wheel here, but, you know.
No, they were just interesting to me. All right, here we go, real quick. There were 9 unbiblical statements that Bible-loving Christians believe. One of the greatest gifts that God gave mankind was the Holy Bible, because the Bible is literally God revealing himself and communicating himself to mankind, including forlorn ladies or hippies with the dreadlocks out in the forest.
I think that is a girl, by the way.
You think it's a lady?
I blew it up on my phone.
How are you making that distinction?
It's pretty clear. It's pretty soft, smooth hair once you get up there.
What the heck, Dan?
I'm just saying.
Dude, it's silky smooth hair.
Silky smooth hair.
So
yeah,
therefore,
exactly.
It's a lady.
It's not dreadlocks.
I've used conditioner before. I can get a Pantene style.
But can you get dreadlocks?
Were you ever
that?
A lady?
All right.
Because apparently, silky smooth hair is an identifier.
All right. There's
this is important.
So we'll see if we agree with those. However, there are many things that Jesus following, church going, Bible believing, a bunch of hyphen Christians believe that are completely unbiblical. How does this happen? Often we'll hear someone quote a statement that sounds nigh to us, and we'll begin repeating it as though it's biblical truth without ever researching it in the scriptures. Several of these unbiblical statements have gained enough traction that many people believe they're actually Bible verses. Not only are the statements unbiblical, most of them teach the opposite of what the Bible teaches. And here's let me clarify up front here. The reason we bother to even do something like this is the same reason we do things like secular versus Solomon, and we go through our Dear Life from the Path advice stuff. It is not to say, hey, you're going around using these phrases and you're a bad Christian because
right. You bought the footprints poster. Boo.
That is not the point. The point is to understand where does our wisdom come from? And is there wisdom from God that we are otherwise mistaking as wisdom from the outside world or vice versa? Because ultimately, if this is where to be rooted, we want to make sure we're rooted in the right thing. And it is based upon the conversation we've already had so far and how it relates to art. Stuff like that can be misconstrued and used incorrectly. And so the point is like, if my trust is in God, I want to make sure that what I'm bringing is actually from God. That's the point. Okay. So sometimes it comes offensive, like, well, I got a bookmark that's got that phrase on it, and you must be saying I'm a sinner.
Paid $12 for that.
Yes, you very are much a sinner, but that doesn't mean I hate your bookmark. It just means let's understand where wisdom's coming from. All right, number one, God helps those who help themselves. This statement is actually anti-gospel. Self-reliance and self-righteousness, or the attitude of trying harder and doing better, actually gets in the way of the work of God. Jesus saves those who die to themselves. Then Jesus told his disciples, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. Bhuva, is that a big pondering breath?
I've actually never heard this one before.
You've never heard God helps really? Those who help themselves?
Yeah. Echo knows that one.
It's a bit. Ben Franklin has said that. And so
is that the origin from?
I think so. Yeah.
Because I was thinking it kind of just sounds like good American. Yeah. Theology.
American.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
We're American. We help ourselves and God helps us afterwards.
So you have heard this.
Exactly. God, let me handle about 97% of it, and then what I can't handle, you take care of the rest, okay? Thank you, Jesus. We appreciate you. You're the best, America.
I didn't see that coming.
That was amazing.
Anyway.
Hey, man, we run into a lot of problem with this, right? This it really does. Where the arena where we, where especially the American Christian Church runs into problems with this is when it comes to America and God, where we're usually God and country, and we flip around normally as they have to be together, like they fight together as one, and that is not always true.
Well, this is often the phrase people will use to not help, say, homeless people, people in need, people that are just down on their luck. Well, get a job. Help yourself, and God will help you.
Yeah.
I mean, that's honestly, I've heard that multiple times from people leading benevolence ministries.
Yeah.
Most of the statements on this list I would put in kind of a gray area of, okay, yeah, what you're saying, I don't find it in the Bible, or the sentiment is, could be interpreted one way or the other. This is one that actually flies in the face of the Bible. It just looks at the character of God and just completely rejects him entirely. It's like, God has postured himself as someone who will help the helpless, and this statement does the exact opposite of that.
Yeah. Help yourself, orphan.
So I don't know how I don't know how someone who claims to follow God can honestly make a statement like this unless they're also being ignorant about God. So
and I think it's somewhat of like a fallacy that we've kind of bought in American culture. This whole with our faith that it's just kind of like it's just me and God and nobody else can help me and I should never try and ask anybody else for help. It's like that's what Christianity is, and it's like you look at the gospel and you look at the Bible and you see God intended for us to be in community.
Definitely,
like he intended for us to not just do this alone. And he wants us to help those in need. He wants us to be there for those who just cannot do it on their own. And I like the side comment you made of like, help yourself, orphan. It's just like, it's really kind of sad sometimes how we do buy into that, even in ourselves. Like, it's like, nobody else can help me with this. Nobody else wants to stand beside me in this because we put our identity in how well of an American Christian we can do this on our own.
Yep.
We don't need that help. We don't need that accountability. And it just kind of leads us even down more destruction in that. So,
Yeah, definitely agree. In fact, it was one of the quotes that I think we had on Twitter about a week ago was something that David said, which is a moral America is much different than an America that hungers and thirsts for righteousness. Mm. And so, like, we've kind of had this mixed bag of what it looks like to be moral, and the American definition often has very little to do with what it is to live in God's kingdom. And we are not, it's not an individual focus, it's a community focus. And like, and our, the burdens of the community are shared in that way. And you're right, often we understand our relationship with God, and we understand our relationship and how we interact with other people on a very individual basis, because it's hard to pull someone else up by their bootstraps. That's not in our colloquial phrases. And so we end up using that, and that's how we view the world. And it is destructive to ultimately the way that God's kingdom functions, even if you see whatever positive American output you have from following that direction and moving in that way. All right, let's see. We're probably going to have to split these up. Let's look at number two. God wants me to be happy. It's a common belief that God exists to be our personal genie, waiting to give us every wish. It's amazing how we will justify our sinful actions by saying, God just wants me to be happy. Happiness is tied to feelings and emotions that are often based on circumstances, and those change all the time. God wants us to be obedient to him, trust him, and know that everything he does is for our good, even if it doesn't make me feel happy in that moment.
I have no idea what Bible you're reading.
It's the unbiblical statement, yeah, Bubba. Second, you can't accuse the man. He's writing the good article.
I think Ben reads the ESV, Bubba.
Well, no. So what the state or what the article is in regards to is Bible-believing Christians that get caught up in these statements. Mm-hmm. I don't see someone who reads that Bible and then finds this true.
Oh, but they do. They do.
Right, exactly. They do. And I agree that it exists. That's the problem. I don't see what Bible you're reading or what verses you're reading that find it where God has happiness set up for everyone. I'm sorry. I don't remember the last time I read through the Bible from start to finish and didn't see, 300 people who died. A lot of painful deaths, a lot of really awful situations, years upon years of torment upon, stranded in the wilderness who's eating like manna. That didn't sound like a happy kind of time. I don't remember Job saying very many times, man, I'm super happy about what God's got me going through. Satan, thanks for what you've done for me to grow my faith in my God. I'm super happy right now. No, I don't see what Bible you're reading. You are flat out wrong, and I'm sorry for you because your expectations of your God, it's not from my God. That's not the same person that we're talking, or not the same being that we're talking about. If you think your expectations are, God's going to make me super happy, and I'm going to rock at this life, and then I'm going to end it, and God's going to go, hey, did you have a good time? The ride's over. Come on into heaven.
Maybe. Yeah, so the truth of this is God doesn't want you to be happy. He wants you to be joyful, and those are very different things.
Yeah.
Happy is something that I feel after I eat a delicious meal, and I'm thinking, hey,
me too.
I'm happy. Mm. But it's very situational, whereas joy is something that, I mean, literally, God is the only supplier of joy. I can't get joy from a meal. I can't get joy from my friends, from my family, or anything else, any other of these temporary situations of life. I only get joy from God, from being in his presence and being satisfied in him. That's the only source of joy is him. So he's got a monopoly on it, but he gives it out freely. That's what he wants you to be filled with is joy, not happiness. Happiness, I mean, it comes, it goes. Who cares?
And I think that's a good distinction, Eric, because one of the things when we fight against God wants me to happy, I think appropriately, because that is used to justify a lot of very inappropriate behavior, it makes it sound like we're asking you to like you need to be unhappy, like that the opposite is God wants me to be unhappy, and that's false, yeah. Right? That's ridiculous. Yeah. But it's understanding where the source of those things come from. Like, can I live a Job? Can I be in a Job style situation and still praise God? Can my wife say, Ben, curse God and die? And I say, no.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, is there still part of that? And I understand where that joy comes from. That he's redirecting where you're looking to be filled, as opposed to saying, like, it comes out wrong. It feels wrong when we say, no, God doesn't want you to be happy. He wants you to be something else, but it's not unhappy. Like, that's not exactly what he's pointing you to. It's just you're trying to fill the need that you have for him in your life was something else, and he's trying to get you to stop that.
God fully understands how cheap happiness is. He understands how pointless happiness is. He wants you to draw your worth and your identity through him, and that's the joy that you have. And Herrick's absolutely right. You know, joy is the monopoly that God has. It's if you can find yourself calling yourself a child of God and living like that, living in the kingdom, that's where your whatever you want to call it is. Joy comes from. And this happiness thing that we keep promising ourselves because we think that we're good enough to be happy, that's where all this stems from. I just don't understand.
This often comes from people who are living in the emotion of the moment, and they know what makes them feel happy, even though it may be what they know is scripturally wrong, and it's the instant gratification thing. They don't want to fight through a difficult health situation, a difficult family situation. My marriage is falling apart. He just wants me to be happy, so I need to find somebody else. Instead of fighting through it and finding joy later on that I have persevered through this and followed Christ and I've found pure joy that I didn't even know existed. It was so beyond the happiness of the moment, but it's hard to see that down the road when all I can feel is the emotion right here. I want this right now to be good.
Right.
And I think that's where a lot of that comes from. Yeah, when I've heard it.
Absolutely. And I think the thing that we sometimes forget is God stands outside of time and space. Like, his focus is eternal. Like, ours is usually not. And so what we try to do is we try to fill our perspective of temporary things to satisfy ourselves, like you've been saying. And I think it's something that's really good, and like what we've been saying to bring up, though, is that, yes, God does want us to be joyful and not chase happiness, but he did also create those emotions. Like, he is the originator and creator of all those things, and so we can't just be like, God, what you created is kind of crappy. Like, I mean, it's something that we shouldn't find our identity in, because we're trying to find our identity in him. Yep. It's just a supply of something he's given us that we can enjoy sometimes, but we shouldn't rely on that to be our fulfillment.
Right, so. Right. And he's not asking you to elevate whatever nature of that is above what he's also what he's presented as is the thing that provides joy, which is generally where that's coming from, right, Dan? Like, yeah. That's what you're saying is this. At point in time, we say, this is what God values above his relationship with me, the pursuit of righteousness. He wants me to be in this situation happier than I am. And it's you know, I was talking to my wife about this week. It's like almost always, and this happens to be true for, I think, theological differences that I would say that I have with other people that believe things, and like where people get skewed in a bunch of different ways. It doesn't tend to be a serious misconception. It just tends to be significant imbalance. Is we choose a particular thing that we believe, or we choose a particular aspect of God's character, and we say, this is more important than anything else, and it takes a counterweight, and then it starts to inform everything else we believe, and it gets out of balance the way that God actually presents himself. And that's where actually things start to go askew. And good distractions are like that, right? They're not complete lies. They're just things in which we say, here, this thing is accurate. And then we elevate it. We make it something that it's not. We lift it above other things, even though we don't really have any reference to do that. And that's how we get down wrong roads theologically. It's how we get down wrong roads in how we behave. And we say, like, look how God will do X, Y, and Z because I've seen him do it. And we ignore the 10 other things of a life that produces that. When the same God that wants to bless an institution like marriage that he created is also the same God that says, fellas, there are times when your prayers will be hindered. I simply will not hear them because of how you're interacting with your spouse. And so, like, you have to recognize both of those things as being true without elevating one or the other and say, I will act based upon limited information even though I know better. And so it's almost always an issue of more of imbalance than it is straight-up falseness. All right. We're going to have to cut the rest of those. We'll finish going through those, or at least take some more shots at them next week. We're looking at 9 biblical, unbiblical statements that Bible-loving Christians believe. And so we got through number 2. Let's for next week, we'll try to hit on, we're all God's children, cleanliness is next to godliness, and God won't give you more than you can handle. And so we'll try to hit those 3 for next week. All right. So earlier, we've got a few minutes before we have to hit the break. Echo, let me ask this question. So when you had this concept, like, and you said, hey, can you kind of capture the vibe of this thing in this graphic novel, in this comic book? If you could put to words in a few short words the vibe, like what is it that you were going for? How would you describe that for someone to start to use as the paints for the palette, if you will?
Absolutely. So the concept of the dream state,
yeah,
is taking us to this point where we all face is that when we face struggles, when we face trials, pain, just suffering, those kinds of things. It's interesting how it kind of ties in with what we've been talking about, but we start to go to a different place. We kind of push those out and kind of pretend, oh, those aren't real. That's not happening in my life. We don't tell people about it. We're like, oh, we're good. Everything's fine. And we try to go to that place that's just happy.
Yep.
That place that's just, there's no problems. And it's the dream state, where the place we want to have on earth.
Yeah.
This perfect, like, nothing's wrong with me. Nothing happens in my life that can hurt me. And that's what we live in so much in our mindset and in our hearts sometimes. And so that's what I'm trying to address, is getting into that world where my mind's been, where
right.
my heart's been at times, and pulling that out and bringing people along for that journey as well. So.
Yeah. All right. That's a good, I don't know. It's a good synopsis that people can kind of take a look at that and know what they're jumping into. And actually, even just thinking of some of the cover art that's on the thing, I think expresses some of that. Really very well.
Thank you.
It's a cool deal, man. Make sure you're checking that stuff out. Get on the website, dreamstateexp.com.
You got it.
Get that thing downloaded. There's a quick sign-up process. You can download the file. I mean, and they give you everything, man. Give it some time to download, and everything is at your fingertips, and you can start kind of just diving in to this experience that Echo and Lunar 11 have been able to create. And so make sure you show those guys some love. Hook up with them on Facebook and Twitter. There's a comment section on the website. Let them hear from you on what you're feeling through this thing. If you're enjoying it, if it makes you upset and you want to, you know, kick puppies about it, like whatever it is,
please.
Fellas got to know, right?
Yeah, we want to know that first, actually.
Yeah.
You write us first, the puppy kicking and whatnot. We need to talk to you.
Because
directly.
I really love puppies, so if you're thinking about doing that, we need to
We won't pass that information on Echo. We'll talk about it privately.
We'll let him live in his little dream.
Oh!
And snap.
make sure you you just spend some time soaking this thing in, and then art is exponentially better as it is interacted with.
Mm-hmm.
It just is. And to be honest, like even if your experience isn't what artists are creating it to be, like that is kind of the cool thing about art, is that you're able to interact with the different ways, and you're bringing an entire different mindset than perhaps the creator. And art gets to play on that field where everyone gets to take it in a little bit differently and try to understand each other better because of it. It's a very cool experience. So interact with them in that way. Hook up with, like I said, on use social media for good in the world, dang it. And
don't posture yourself.
Stop posturing. Just say, I loved it or I did not.
Yes.
And then talk about it and talk about it and be part of that experience. It's very cool. So we're not done. If you're listening to us on 99.3, the Truth Network, we have got to let you go. Our medium grade dollars only keep us on the air so long. Big thanks to our sponsors, though. Big thanks to Bob Eisenhower with the Eisenhower team. Go to EisenhowerTeam.com for your home buying and selling needs. We have a lot of cool interactions with Bob this week. They're just great guys. We vouch for them because A, we love them. B, I've done house stuff with them. So has Mike. They're just the right guys for the job. And so hook up with the Eisenhower team. Also, Westfield Veterinary Hospital, westfieldvethospital.com. You can sign up online, get your appointment scheduled if you're too lazy to pick up the phone. But, hey, if you like picking up the phone, they're going
to
be there for that,
too.
They
got people to talk to you.
Yeah, they pay phone folk.
And they're very mad about this kick puppies thing that's come up.
Yeah, yeah. We're going to have to hook them up with the email as well. They also do great work. It's where I take my two dogs. It's where Mike has recently had a cat missing an eye. They've taken care of that situation.
One-eyed Mabel.
Yeah, one-eyed Mabel is now seeing, albeit through one eye, but seeing better days for having interacted with Westfield Veterinary Hospital. So go to, westfieldvethospital.com, and they can hook you up with that way. If you're on the Truth Network, we got to let you go. Hey, be faithful in the means, and God will handle the ends. You've been listening to Life from the Path.
Go to Casey's this time.
I don't know. Are you leaving? What are you doing over there?
I
say we got more show to go, and you're standing up. Getting
I
ready to
stood
head
up because A, my legs hurt, and B, I wanted to switch chairs because the chair I was in was awful.
Hey, man, are you just gonna stand up? That's epic.
I might think about it. Yeah.
When Boova and Echo leave, you might have to change the camera shot or something. Man, it basically looks like we're done.
It's going to be an uncomfortable shot that everyone's right. Just like, hey.
Yes. Boova, hey, I get that this is internet radio, but we can't have this.
Come on.
We've just been flagged.
Zacchaeus, come down from there.
Hey, just because I'm tall doesn't mean I'm in a sycamore.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that has to stop.
I stood up because my legs hurt. And that chair was awful. Hey, I apologize.
Do you remember? That's right. It'd been 3 years ago by now, but Ben was on some kind of kick that everybody was going to stand, and it was going to raise the energy level in the room.
Yep. And then, like 5 minutes later, we're all like, "Well, Mike can do it."
Well,
two of us fell asleep.
This stinks.
Hey, I remember that one time I decided to stand up for an hour. No, I don't. No, that didn't happen.
All right, you want some of this action?
Yeah. What do you got?
Dear Life from the Path. About a year ago, I loaned a small amount of money to a close friend I have known since childhood. She promised to pay me back, but has yet to do so. I wasn't too concerned because it was a minimal amount, but a few months ago, she asked to borrow a larger amount. Again, I didn't hesitate to help her out because she has been there for me several times in the past in important ways, although they weren't financial. Because the recent loan was a large one, I would like to be repaid. How do I tactfully ask her for the money without seeming petty or like I'm nagging? I don't like confrontation. And is it too late to ask that the previous smaller amount be included as well?
Yes. That's awesome.
From friend, not an ATM.
Okay. Yeah, all right. Let's answer that in reverse order. First of all, is it okay to ask for the previous amount back?
No.
No.
Why not?
Give up on it.
Because they're coming and asking for money from you. They don't have it.
No, that's a solid point. Solid point. You're going to bleed a stone. All right. Secondly, how do you handle the situation about asking for the aid? Is it if it's a major amount of money, do you ask for it back? If it's that big a deal, do you not give it to them? Or do you find a tactful way to say, hey, I need that cash back?
You want a Mike general principle?
Yeah, that's it.
Obviously not stamped approved by the Lord, but this is the way that I feel about loaning out money. I just don't do it. I either give you the money or I don't give it to you. I don't do loans because I feel like this situation is awkward. And like, if I have the money, you can have it. If I don't have the money, you cannot have it.
You got $20?
Yeah.
I don't. I got two, and you can have it.
I'll take it.
You're a terrible person, Dan.
But I'm wealthy.
But I've made millions.
Off of good-natured fools who will give me money.
It's Dan Low Dollar.
Who keep no record of wrongs.
You dumb Christian. Give me $5.
So this is something that I've dealt with too. Kind of trying to figure out the whole, hey, do they pay me back? Should they pay me back? Should I be a stickler about it? I feel like what I've run into is if I'm able to set up a situation where I feel like I should be paid back, I look ridiculous right now.
It's very scary, Bubba.
It's terrifying. If I feel like I'm in a situation where I can maintain a relationship with that person and still be in a good working relationship with that person and talk about the fact that, hey, you know, I loaned you $500 or whatever amount of money that is, that's a large amount to you, and that person is talking to you about, hey, I'm going to pay it back, that's no problem. And you guys can have the working relationship while saying, yes, that's fine, no, no problems, then it's not an issue. But if it becomes something to where you guys fight about it constantly, if it becomes something that you think you're going to fight about constantly, or you're going to have to be a stickler about it, either don't give it away because you're not going to be generous enough to be able to just let it go, or give it away and be generous enough to just let it go. That it's not your money in the long run. It's the Lord's money, and that's for them. So if you're able to give it and you want to set it up a payment plan, whatever you want to do, where you can still have that relationship and they can pay you back, awesome. But if you cannot do that, either don't give it or give it not expecting it back.
I find your way more confusing than mine.
That's fair, Mike, because you don't give it.
And you got to see how other people react.
Well, from the perspective of if somebody needs $1,000 and I have $1,000 right now, but I would like to be paid that $1,000 back, and I can still work with you and say, hey, Mike, I got a grand for you right now, no issues. And you say, Troy, I really appreciate that back, and I'll make sure I pay you back. And I go, awesome. And then you actually start paying me back, it's not a big deal.
But what if I don't, though?
If you don't start paying me back and I'm not willing to let you go without it, then I need to not give it in the first place.
Okay, I'm with you. So we're in agreement. Yours just takes longer.
Yes, mine just takes longer.
Okay, I'm with you.
So be generous enough to be able to give it away if you think that there's any chance of not being able to maintain a relationship while getting it back.
Anybody else?
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. It doesn't hurt to have the conversation just for your own peace of mind. Hey, do you plan on giving this back? And then just you have to write it off. I mean, she knows. She knows she owes the money. It's not like she suddenly forgot. I don't know how significant, you know, a significant amount of money is.
Yeah.
But you know if you borrowed money from someone,
I would
think.
Let's say it's $65,000.
You would know that.
Yeah.
I'm just throwing a number out.
I bought a mobile home with your money. I completely forgot.
I'm really in the streets.
It was free.
Oh, crap. Jerry bought me that Corvette. I forgot about that, man.
By the way, I got a new address now.
You can't have it.
I actually had a friend years ago, 20 years ago. I can't remember. It was tax issues. Like, there was something going on, and he had approached me and said, hey, I will lend you $10,000. I'm like, dude, he's just this business guy in the church. At first, it blew me away that anyone would have $10,000. I was a pretty young guy. Now I have it all over the place. But and I said, here's the deal. If we're going to do this, I'm going to put it in writing, and I'm going to pay you whatever interest you would have if you had this, at least what you had in investments. And so we made an agreement, and I paid him back. I mean, but it was a benefit for him and us. It was a blessing for him and us because he got to help us, and I got to pay him back. But I can't imagine not remembering.
No, that seems unlikely. Okay.
Okay, so Secular's advice is you don't have to be confrontational, and I wouldn't advise it anyway. In light of the fact that your friend has made no effort to repay the first loan for the entire year, it would be neither pushy nor nagging to ask when she intends to start. If she can't come up with the entire amount, perhaps she can pay a little each month. However, if she won't start paying you back, you may have to accept that you won't be getting any of your money. In the future, you should not lend anyone money without first getting a signed note stating that the money is owed to you and when it will be repaid. That way, if necessary, you can take the matter to court and have a leg to stand on when you get there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's how I like to posture my relationship with friends. If only I'll have a document of which I can take someone to court later.
That's true. Hey,
it's
man.
A solid thought.
I'm kind of in the straits. Can you loan me like $500? Listen, I plan on this going to litigation.
I have every intention of suing you at some point in time if you don't pay me back.
I don't know what false premise friendship you think we're on, Zacchaeus, but I'll tell you what you're going to do.
You hey, man, righteous. You still coming over for football on Sunday?
Right.
You still chips. Owe me money.
Hey, this is Booba. You owe me money.
Really?
Give me $20 for that baked potato.
You owe me $700 and you brought the just small jar of queso? I would have wrote it off if you would have brought a couple jars.
I see. I see you brought the big gulp with you. Must be rolling in the money at your place.
That looks like a new shirt there, bud.
Here's the thing. It's not unreasonable. It's just not helpful.
Yeah.
Right? It just doesn't accomplish anything that as a Christ follower that I'm looking to accomplish. Yeah. I mean, the truth is like, Dan, your situation is a little different because... Like, that was for your peace of mind more than his.
Yeah,
you know
right.
What I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, hey, I need to be careful in case I need to take this guy to court. Like, I don't want to take him to court. I'm more likely, because I don't like handling complication things, I'm more likely to handle it Mike's way. Where I'd be like, if I have it, you can have it, and you just have it outright. If not, I don't have it to give you anyway. And so it answered my own question. Very basic way of handling things. It makes my life a lot easier.
Yeah.
Okay. Dear Life from the Path. My boyfriend and I have been together for 3 years and have planned our first vacation together. Mm-hmm. We decided to split the expenses 50-50.
This is brilliant.
Last week, he announced that he has invited his sister and her boyfriend to go along and stay with us in the apartment we rented. Not only was I shocked that he would invite them without checking with me first, I became upset when he said he wasn't asking them to pitch in any money. Normally, I'm not stingy when it comes to sharing, but I'm angry, and I wonder if I'm overreacting. His mom died last year, and his sister's the only family he has left, which he tends to remind me of to make me feel guilty. How should I react to this?
Okay.
Well,
go
ahead.
Yeah, he very much changed the nature of whatever this vacation was that you were planning.
Which is good. It should not be entirely romantic due to your non-married status.
Yeah, so you're in separate rooms anyway, right? So what's the big deal?
Ladies sleep in one room, dudes in the other.
There you go.
That's not what she was asking.
I was just. Like, wait, you're right. That was not what she was asking.
We're trying to protect them from themselves.
I was making sure we were hashing out that part, too. It was.
This is the right answer to the wrong question.
Added on commentary.
Sometimes Jesus gave the right answer to the wrong question.
Yeah. All right. Try at least to and help her in her circumstances, assuming they're good natured people who are not
going
getting it
sin
on
no
dirty
more.
In the hotel room.
Okay. You got to drop this thing. He's just trying to be generous to some folks. And you're going to be generous as well, I guess.
Yeah, if you're not taking on more costs based off of these people. And
you
and
were paying 50-50 in the first place.
I was going to say.
Really changed?
Yeah, no, your situation hasn't changed unless he's asking you, hey, you know, by the way, they're not going to be pitching any more money, and we're going to be paying for every single thing that they're doing. Oh, and we're going to be splitting that, too.
I thought she was going to say that he invited them, and then he's splitting the cost three ways.
I expected that, too.
And she takes 50, and then they three take the 50. And that I thought, well, okay, this sounds reasonable to be upset about.
Yeah, that'd
although,
be understandable
I mean,
if they're
to
all
be
paying
fair,
like
18%. That's a whole different dynamic, right? Like, vacationing with your significant other or vacationing with three other people, like, that's not the same deal.
No,
and so,
right.
Like, I'd be upset about that, I think. Yeah.
That's what I meant by he has changed the nature of the
Yeah.
It's understandable for her to be upset if she wants to go and have the conversation with him saying, hey, you know, we had a vacation planned, and I feel like you did not come to me at all about this new decision, and I you know, I understand.
And I don't
want to
go.
Yeah.
I don't
want to
go hang out with your sister and her boyfriend.
It's a really odd thing. They are dating, which means the whole purpose of dating is to find someone to be married to. So she's already found he's not the guy to marry. Just go ahead and dump him.
Dan says just break it off.
Whoa.
You marry a person, you marry their family. So this is a good opportunity for her to get to know his family.
He's not a communicator.
He did not communicate that.
Now, hold on a minute. He's not a communicator. That's every guy I know, Dan. There would be no marriage anywhere.
They'll be coming to me in 10 years saying my husband never communicates.
All right, hold on.
I want to be happy.
One guy at a time here, folks. This is radio. No one can see you acting like a
fool. Booba won't stop talking, Ben.
I can't help it. He's like that. He's gotten louder since he stood up.
I feel the energy.
This is why I did not stand up in the normal situation. I can't walk before the show anymore because then I get up and then I get fired up a little bit more and I'm like, I'm right.
Oh, see, Ben, it's still happening.
I think in this situation, drop the mic.
Now he's pouting.
Just in the corner.
Why do you have problems communicating, Bubba?
I think... Especially in these relationships, in this thing, To be honest, at least from the perspective that I'm kind of getting from her, if they had just sat down and talked this and fleshed this out, I think she would have been a little bit more okay with this.
Yep.
And so I think the thing to do is honestly just talk that out. Because here's the thing. Yes, you need to talk out this current situation, but you also need to discuss, like, hey, listen, we're dating. We need to have this kind of communication. Like, those are kind of big deal questions and decisions that we should be making together. And that, like, that's a growing process together. Because nobody's going to be perfect and always communicate right. And that, I mean, this is a very different turn of events with his decision that he's made. But I think...
Sometimes you get to know people who can't judge a room. You know what I'm saying? Like, they don't have any... They're just... Their ability to walk in and tell whether, like, the people are mad at them or, like, whether a fight has just happened, like, 5 minutes ago and there's a certain thickness in there. Mm. Like, they don't grasp that kind of crap, you know? Like, this dude comes... Are you doing that thing again? This thing comes off as one of those kind of guys. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's like, yeah, this sounds like a great idea. Doesn't judge that maybe this might upset his girlfriend in any way.
Right.
He's just like, yeah, great, come along. It'll be great. We're going out of town. You sound like you could probably use a break. They got some stuff going on. Come on. You know what I'm saying? Like, so, I mean, it's easy to paint the guy as some kind of jerk face who, you know, just wants to do whatever he wants. But he just might not have the wherewithal to be able to judge reactions of others very well. And it just was overly generous without thinking it through.
Okay. So all concur with Echo's general advice, which is you don't need to make a straight decision right at the moment. Let's talk it out. But understand that, like, there is something about him making a quick decision without consulting you that does speak to some element of your relationship that is worth exploring.
Yeah.
Okay. Secular advice.
Secular says, tell your boyfriend that out of consideration for you, he should have cleared it with you before inviting anyone to come along. When he tries to make you feel guilty about reminding you that his sister is all the family has left, patiently explain that you understand this, but this was supposed to be your first trip together, just the two of you, and this has taken the romance out of it. That's true. Then make it clear that you do not intend to foot the bill for your sissy and her boyfriend, because that is not fair to you. And if he doesn't agree, cancel the trip, because you wouldn't enjoy it anyway. Ha! And then hit him with your purse, because that's the kind of attitude you want to use. That seems a little rough.
Yeah, that might have overdone it. You might get to that point, I guess. But I don't know that I'd start there.
And I'm wondering, this is from her perspective.
Yeah.
You know, there's been conversations I've had with my wife where I had already decided something was going to happen, and then I come in with the conversation, and I don't tell her I've decided. I try to make it, you know, a conversation.
Uh-huh. I basically...
Where she comes to a conclusion, and I say, that's a great idea.
I shine it on
she
until
sees
she
right
says,
through it, though. But I haven't made the decision. I've just, I mean, with the other people, I've just decided I want this to happen.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
You know, and so I'm not saying that's ideal. I'm just saying it's a bad idea.
We got time for one more?
Yeah, one more.
All right. Dear Life from the Path, for the past few years, my mom's, with whom I spend my birthday every year, has gotten into the habit of buying my birthday present the day of. She waits until my birthday, then buys them in a rush all at one store, or suggests we go shopping together. She's not stingy on price. In fact, she tends to spend more than I think she should. What bothers me is she makes no effort to prepare a gift in advance and just asks me then and there what I want. She also often buys me a number of things I didn't ask for. The last thing I want to do on my birthday is go shopping. It has made me increasingly less excited about my birthday each year. How do I explain to her without sounding ungrateful that I'd rather receive one thoughtful present than a lot of expensive ones?
Thoughtful might not be her strong suit.
Yeah, and you might be ungrateful for people buying you stuff.
Her love tanks is that receiving gifts thing. That's more important to her than the price tag. And the other gal, the mom, she's just doing it.
Who cares what day they bought it? This seems like a very odd distinction to me.
I'd kind of like it more. Like a new car, Dad.
I bought you a shirt 2 days ago. I bought you a shirt today. Okay. I'll probably wear it the same way.
Yeah, but if they say that it's the thought that counts, then there was really very little thought involved in this.
No one actually says that, do they? No, I mean, that's what people say when the gift is crappy.
Yeah, these are solid
gifts. No one really says, hey, it's the thought that counts. No, I mean it.
By the way, I put a lot of thought into this. Here you go.
She wants to buy them all at one store. Oh, no. One store. I deserve multiple stores on my birthday. Doesn't the man, I feel like he comes off a bit entitled.
So, somebody sympathize with him.
No.
I'm trying to. Yeah. I'm really, really trying to.
Nope.
You're an adult. Shut up. You don't get a birthday anymore.
You are no longer birthed.
You get a birthday every 10 years.
Okay, why do you think I'm with Booba?
Why do you think it's a woman?
Well, I thought it was.
I thought it was a dude.
Is it a dude or?
I just know it's an adult.
It doesn't.
Guys don't care. Oh. That's something a girl would care about.
Yeah.
I feel like I know some.
That's
dudes
offensive,
don't care
probably,
about
Dan.
That.
Probably is.
There's a good chance that's offensive. Dan.
Oh, that's definitely a girl.
Yeah, it's rough times.
You get a birthday at the turn of every decade.
Hey, we'll edit Dan's out and just say that Echo said it.
Hey, did you know that like 75% of the people that watch the show on YouTube, like our show on YouTube, are women?
Really?
That is, we have a much stronger lady demographic. Hey, have that surprise you this week?
I mean, to be
most
honest,
of our audiences are wives.
I mean, you're getting a lot of viewpoints in mind. Like, you're getting a lot of viewpoints from guys, so they're like, how do I get to understand guys more?
Yeah, that's right.
Let's listen to a talk show.
There's some
guys.
Idiots.
look what having a penis did to those fellas.
Now they don't know how to give gifts.
Hey, I want it noted that that's podcast. I did not say
that's true.
I did not say penis on the broadcast there.
Duly noted.
It's a good move. All right, we'll dig on secular. No one wants to sympathize with man.
No.
I'm hard. Shut up.
All right, secular says, excuse me, but you do sound ungrateful. Your mother may not be as emotionally invested in birthday celebrations as you are, or she may do this because she wants to ensure that you have gifts for your birthday you can actually use. Rather than criticize her generosity, why not mention in the weeks before your birthday what you might like to have? If you do, it might save her some money and some frustration.
Mm. Mom, I prepared a list of all of the gifts that I would like this year, and I sent it a month before my birthday this year. You have plenty of time to go and buy all my gifts. Thank you very much.
I did a registry at Target.
I have a hard time with this. Like, my in-laws, awesome. Like, they ask you what you want for Christmas, and I was not prepared for this. Growing up, you know? And, like, I mean, she always rocks it. She always, you know, she'll pick out some stuff that you didn't necessarily, you know, right ask for. But like,
isn't that awkward though?
Other than that, they're like, "What do you want?
I need a blue iPad.
I'm like, I'll take this and this specifically." She's like, "I want my money to go to something that you specifically wanted." You know, but like, it's just really awkward being
like,
"Here's how you can spend your money on me." You know, like, it just feels really weird to do. Yeah. But like, it's the same generous heart as in someone just buying you something. It just, I don't know, like, the exchange feels odd, you know?
I want to know what the budget is, because it's like, what do you ask for, really? I mean, yeah.
Ask for a giraffe.
I always shoot one, I always throw the moon at one of them, you know what I'm saying? Like, I always ask for something outrageous, and then I ask for, like, whatever, 3-4 things that are reasonably priced. Yeah. But I always shoot for some outrageous thing in case they befall the lottery or something, then at least I'd have my digs in before Christmas.
Yeah. That's what I told my daughters, just give a range, they can choose. Grandparents always are asking them for a list.
Oh, yeah. Okay. It's like... All right, here's the deal. You've been listening to Life and Path. Thanks so much for hanging out with us this week. Hey, a big thanks to Echo. Echo, thank you so much for coming in. Mm-hmm. It's always awesome to see him.
TheDreamStateExp.com.
That's right. That's right. Download that beast. Hook up with them with Lunar 11 and Echo on Twitter and Facebook and stuff. Keep that conversation rolling. Enjoy some good art and share that with other folks. And big thanks to our sponsors, Bob Eisenhower with the Eisenhower team and Westfield Veterinary Hospital, westfieldhospital.com. Be faithful in the means, doggone it. God will handle the ends. Thanks for listening to Life in the Path.